If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and with Rohan nursing a birthday hangover and Chris Herring off being a literal professor teaching literal students, I'm joined today by my good friend, Sports Illustrated staff writer Jeremy Wu. Wu, how are you doing today, my man?
Good. You know, I've been on the practice squad for a couple of weeks, just waiting for my just to come back on the pod. You know, I'm just it's been a long time. I don't know if I've been on here since the Gulliver era. I can't remember, to be honest. So it's always nice to be back.
We call those the dark days. I am, of course, kidding. Shout out to Ben Gulliver if you're listening. So as promised, we are going to break down the top 30 players from Sports Illustrated's top 100 list, a project that you, Wu, basically were the captain of, so shout out to you. But first, a quick reminder to get your emails in to openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. The season is right around the corner. Training camp's open next week, and there's so much to discuss. We cannot wait to dig into all of your wonderful questions. And the ones you all sent in over the last couple of days were terrific. And we're actually going to start with one from Courtney, who writes in, nice work with the top 100 to 31 pod. Instead of focusing on snubs, I'd like to look towards the future. Which rookies will be on next year's top 100? Which players will move back up into the top 100? I'm a Warriors guy and have been since the 1970s. Who do you think is most likely to make it into the top 100 next year? Kuminga, Moody, Wiseman, or Poole? Also, I said I wasn't going to focus on the snubs, but I personally think the biggest snub was Reggie Jackson. You may have been brainwashed by the former open floor regime. In the Jazz series, he was the fourth best guy out there, ahead of top 100 players like Jordan Clarkson, Joe Ingles, Mike Conley, and Ivica Zubac. Talk about delivering in the last 3 minutes of a playoff game reliably. Happy trails, Courtney. Courtney, that was wonderful. Thank you so much. Wu, there's a specific reason I wanted to start here. You are our resident draft expert. You know way more about the incoming rookie class than I do, or basically 99.99% of the population. So before we kind of dive into this year's list, I kind of wanted to quickly kind of pick your brain here via Courtney's question. So which rookies do you think will be on the top 100 next year? And, you know, if we included any rookies, on this list, which we didn't intentionally, would there be any that you think are just already better than guys in the league right now?
Yeah, that's always such a tough question, which is obviously why we don't try to jump the gun ranking rookies. That's something that Ben and Rob did, which we just kind of decided was easier to say we agree with this. So I think, like, for me, I mean, look, this year we had 3 second-year guys in the top 100, right? We have LaMelo, we have Anthony Edwards, and we have Halliburton. So then, you know, if that's kind of a baseline for what you would have to do as a rookie, thinking about it like that, I mean, I think obviously Cade Cunningham is has a good chance to make the list in some capacity next year. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like because his game is so predicated on, like, having talent to, like, make better around him. And that's kind of like, it's an intangible thing with him. And I don't know exactly what Detroit's going to look like yet. You know, I can see him making it on for sure. If he has a good year, I don't think it'll be hard. I think it'll be hard to keep him off. Jalen Green, you know, you worry about efficiency and whatnot, but then if, you know, we had the same conversation about Anthony Edwards and he ended the year on a hot streak and clearly he deserved to be on the list in some capacity. Right. So, you know, if you use that just as like a basic analog for like a guy with a quick learning curve, who's a really athletic, talented scorer, I think Jalen Green is in that conversation. I think Jalen Suggs probably has a chance. I would expect him to be pretty productive and have a shot at rookie of the year just because of the way he plays every night. Orlando's not going to be very good, but I think the production with Suggs will probably be there to where maybe he gets consideration. And then, you know, Evan Mobley, hard to say just because I don't fully know what Cleveland's going to do with all those bigs. Like, if Evan is only playing 20 to 25 minutes a game, you know, I guess it kind of depends more on how these guys finish the year. Typically with these young guys, we judge one, I think, on second half than first, but, you know, Mobley for sure has a chance. I would expect him to be on the list someday. It could happen really fast. It could take a year or two. I don't know. But as far as rookies, I mean, like, in the short term, that's probably who I'd focus on, because we could open this up, but, you know, we could open up this conversation as much as we want. You know, the watch list will have more names on it. Those are probably the guys who I'd be most like. I think Scottie Barnes is more of like a long-term bet. Kuminga feels like a couple years away. You know, Davion Mitchell was like, I almost included him on the watch list. I didn't just because of the minutes thing. I feel like he's more of like a 2-year, 3-year away guy if he becomes a really good role player. But, you know, it's hard, and it's always hard having this dialogue, especially with the watch list, because we're not just talking about rookies. You know, we're also expanding it to include the second and third year guys. So, with the Warriors guys, what do you think? I mean, sometimes I feel like I'm a little bit too close sometimes to like perceive the whole elephant, so to speak, right? That's the saying, like, I'm sometimes too close, and my preconceived notions about these guys sometimes bleed into what they're doing in the NBA. So I don't know. What do you think?
Well, Jordan Poole, in my opinion, is like the second coming of Michael Jordan. So I really like Jordan Poole. I've been on the record with that for a while, and this season, especially with Clay, he's gonna, you know, take some time to get back. I think there's an opportunity for Poole to kind of up his usage, up his role with that team, and I think they're gonna be good. So that's the one guy who I'm like, okay, I can see him. I think he was actually, when I was making my own list, he was initially on it, and then I had to kind of scratch him off of it because it just didn't make any sense. Even me, the biggest Jordan Poole fan in the world. Yeah, everybody else, I don't think so, unfortunately. Maybe, I mean, you know, Wiseman is the number two pick last year, but really tough to say he's going to jump into the top 100 this season. So it's not looking good for those guys.
Yeah, and like the hard part about this is always like, you know, we can always get excited about players, and if you're a fan of a team, it's rightful, you know, rightfully you should be excited about a player, but it always comes down to, you know, who would you rather take over this guy? And it, you know, with Jordan Poole, you know, I've never been a huge fan. He's gotten better for sure. But if it comes down to, and we're going through the guys, so even just we had in the 90s of our list, it's like, would I take him over any of those guys? No. And could I see myself wanting him more than those guys like in a year? Probably not. Just again, this is development is not linear. We do not know. But it's just, it's always tough to, you know, frame it like that way.
Yeah. So, okay. I want to switch gears a little bit, and, you know, we're going to break down the top 10, which I think is the juiciest part of the list, of course, in a second. But before we do that, I'm curious, when you first saw everyone else's list, like we all submitted, as we, Rohan and I kind of described in an episode earlier this week, we all submitted our top 100s and then sort of aggregated everything and averaged it out that way. But when you saw all of our individual lists, was there a particular player that one of us had ranked either too high or too low that just made you kind of just face plant and just think about quitting your job, quitting your profession, just absolute lunacy?
Oh man, that's rough. You know, when you had Terry Rozier at 48, that was tough for me to swallow.
Absolutely, baby. That was...
I don't know. I think generally we did a pretty good job because the way that we did it worked out so that if one of us was like way high on a player, it kind of corrected, like, for example, like I put like Gallinari at like 70 and Caring's like, yo man, like, and I was like, he gave me the talk and I was like, all right, fine. So, cause you know, for me, it was different. Cause when I was doing this, I was also working on, you know, last year, you know, I did most of the work on the list just in terms of like the order for us. So right. I was kind of working off what I did last year and it was harder for me to like slash guys completely rather than move them up or down. So like, that was one thing for me. Chris had Wiggins kind of high. I won't say exactly where he had him, but I was like, what?
No, we're gonna. You know, when I answer this question, I'm gonna come at Chris, and it's okay. We're all friends here. So I'll if you want me to be the guy who has to throw him under the bus, I'm afraid. No, I'm trying to see where
that was one. He had him at 59.
Oh yeah, that is pretty high. Shout out to you, Chris. Chris's list was great. I really enjoyed it. Honestly,
he probably had the best list.
Definitely the best one.
I'm just saying that because I'm roasting him right now. But
So, you know, I know that Chris is not here to defend himself. So we're going to move off this very quickly. He's doing way more important things with his life, teaching the youth. But he also had Jason Tatum ranked at 11 and Anthony Davis ranked at 12, which all of our listeners will know that, you know, I think that that's just incredible stuff. I personally did not have Tatum ahead of Anthony Davis. Woo, I believe that Tatum is your favorite player of all time. Is that accurate?
Well, I mean, I still had him 15. I still had him 15 on our list. I was just lower on him marginally, very marginally than the rest of you guys. But I think I just have a bad taste in my mouth from watching him on Team USA, which is not what this exercise is about. So...
Yeah, so let's jump to this email from Lucas actually that touches on a really interesting aspect of the list and kind of gets us into the top 10 a little bit. So Lucas writes in, "Hey guys, great episode as always. I am curious to see where in your top 30 you have my guy Daniel Theis. I guess he's top 10, but we'll see. I hate to break it to you, Lucas, but Theis did not make the list." Lucas continues, "I'm also curious about where you have Kawhi Leonard. At first, I was a little shocked at how low you had Jamal Murray, but the explanation is reasonable. The same explanation should actually apply to Kawhi, and I'm curious to see how much he has fallen, but I still think he has to be top 10. Keep up the great work." So the injured players conversation, I want to just dive into that in a second. But I feel like also this is a really good spot to just list the top 10, and then we can kind of talk about how we factored in injuries. So I'm just going to read them really quick. We had number 10 was actually Kawhi Leonard, 9 Anthony Davis, then Joel Embiid, James Harden, Luka, Jokic, Steph Curry, LeBron James at 3, Giannis at 2, and KD at 1. So I think, I don't know about you, but I feel like our top 10 is just immaculate. And that the only possible point of contention really is putting Kawhi in the top 10 ahead of, you know, Dame, who came in at 11, I believe, or Paul George, especially because they're teammates and one of them is going to play this year and one isn't. Can you just sort of walk me through just your thought process when you had to kind of factor in Kawhi? Because obviously he's got the torn ACL. We don't know if he's going to play a second this season. We don't know if he's going to play... you know, 2 months this season. So just what was the thought process there for you when you were trying to kind of factor him into things?
Yeah, Kawhi was one of the really difficult guys to place. And I remember that was one of the first things I think we talked about on our calls was like, how do we treat this? Because I think I like hedged with my ranking. Like I had him outside the top 10, but I felt weird about it. And then, we talked about it and it's like, well, really, and you didn't rank him at all, which was like, cause we didn't know what to do. I think we ultimately settled on, we either have to not rank him at all, or we have to rank him. And if we do rank him, then he has to be in the top 10, but we can't really put him any higher than 10. But if he does play, even if it's like just at the end of the year, still super valuable. He's still, a healthy Kawhi is probably for me would be probably like 4, 5, 6. That's the whole thing with injuries. We don't know. And, teams don't know either. They can hope, Kawhi probably doesn't even know for sure when he's coming back right now. Right. It's September. So, I think you just hope it's as respectable as possible. I mean, like I felt a little weird about, if we're talking about the injured guys, and we had Jamal Murray at 49, I probably would have maybe put him a little higher than that if it were up to me, but ultimately it was pretty marginal. Like people got the idea, I hope, of why that happened. Like I would still take him over Fred VanVleet and Brogdon. But it's hard to like treat all these things as like equal situations. Right.
Right. And if Jamal was 100% healthy, I think, if he was 100% healthy, maybe the Nuggets are like the champions. So
that would
it would just be really weird and trying to figure everything out. But yeah, I think he's like a top 30 player almost easily if 100% healthy. I am a huge fan of his game and particularly just how like impactful he's been in the playoffs. But I couldn't get there because of the injury. And I just felt like that would be kind of unfair to some other guys. But top 50 is you can't, if you're going to do this and you're going to have him there, you can't have him below 50, I feel like. So I think we were fair there. And then my thought process with Kawhi, like if Kawhi was healthy, you could say the same thing. I think the Clippers probably would have won the title. And so leaving him out of the top three, top four, would you say like 4, 5, 6? Like, yeah, it's, you can't do that. So if you're going to have him on this list at all, I feel like it would just be wild to have him outside the top 10. So putting him at 10, I feel like it was right. It was the right thing to do, putting him ahead of Dame. And, there's all these other great players that followed right there. But Kawhi's just, in the playoffs against the Mavs, he was just like, he was insane. He's just such a great player. And just so wildly efficient. So, yeah, I feel like number 10 is pretty good spot for Kawhi for us. We haven't, the list, this is, we're recording this on a Thursday, and we haven't really seen much pushback at all on the top 10 yet. But we have seen a little bit of pushback in other spots on our list. So I'm just curious, Wu, looking at your mentions or any other, type of feedback that you saw over the past few days, what's just the number one thing people think we screwed up that we in fact did not screw up? And you can you can extend, beyond the top 30 for this, because there's been quite a bit of criticism.
Oh, man. It's hard to pick and choose. I think definitely the loudest faction of fans have been the Knicks fans and the absence of RJ Barrett. And it's a good thing that I recently moved out of New York and I'm in witness protection. I detailed this a little bit more in the watch list. He did make the watch list. People were also like, why didn't he make the snubs list? I'll just clarify if you're listening to this podcast and you're wondering that, like, we just did it arbitrarily so that the watch list was players first, second, third year, and snubs was like older guys who had to like explain the decline. I thought that made the most sense. So that's why we did it. It's not like it's any less of an honor, or it's not really anything. It's just very arbitrary. So anyway, with RJ, I've watched him play for such a long time, and he got a lot better last year. His shot, he shot 40% from three, which he had never been a great shooter ever in his career. And I mean, I'd be lying if I said I thought he was going to shoot 40% from three again this year, but I, do think it's enough that he's respectable now, where you do have to kind of at least play him, close out on him. He can shoot the corner three. That's a big addition to his game. So like, I'll preface this with that. But I think the issues are still there. And I think, you have to just kind of, I always think, and this is something I've just like learned over the years with volume scorers, guys who are just like, really thrive with the ball. Most of their value comes when they have the ball. You kind of have to judge those guys on a different curve, because it's just like the in the NBA, the amount of efficiency and quickness with which you have to process and making decisions when you have them all the time, it's just a much higher bar. And like, I think the biggest thing that stood out for me, I can't remember the exact numbers, but I looked, it was just like the distribution of his shots. It's like he took a lot of jumpers. I think the second thing he did the most was attack the basket, which checks out. You know, he always kind of was that type of player, wanted to go downhill. I think there's this perception that he's like a super skilled, like creative scorer. And he never has been that. He was always more of, right, to me, a bully ball guy. And I watched him a lot in high school. I watched him a lot at Duke. This is not so much saying he's bad. It's just, that's how he's always played. Right. So I believe there are different numbers that you can look at, but whatever, but you know, synergy is what I looked at for this. I glanced at it, and he was did not rate out well in terms of scoring around the basket. I think he was like 46%, which is not great, in the paint. Right. And again, over time, I think some of those will turn into fouls. He'll start to get more efficient there, but it's just like when you're constantly going to the basket and you're pounding the ball and you're not converting at an extremely high rate at the rim, you then it raises the question of, you know, how could your shot distribution be better? And is there a more efficient way to be getting these numbers, right? Because points are points. Like, to me, points are the least valuable, unless you're a very high end scorer. Like, points are the least important thing to me, especially when I'm scouting college players. It's kind of, you know, I look for other stuff, because 95% of NBA players are going to have to do other things. So anyway, that's right, kind of a tangent, but you know, that's kind of where personally I landed with Barrett. You know, I'll protect you. You know, you had him ranked, Herring had him on the list. You know, you guys had him in the top 100. For me, I feel like I need to see a little bit more progression just in terms of how his style of play. And we might see that this year, because, you know, they went and got Kemba Walker. They went and got Fournier. There's going to be a lot less pressure on him to create offense. I think he'll probably attack, get more chances to, you know, more open shots, and also, you know, ability to attack defenses once the play is rotated. Like, if he catches it on the weak side and it's swung back to him, like, I think he can do that. So, like, all he has to do really to make the list is just kind of make those adjustments. And I personally think it was fair to say, let's wait one more year. So that was sort of how I felt about it.
I think that's fair for me. And like, you look at his 2-point shooting numbers that you just kind of laid out, and he just wasn't efficient in those areas. And if you're really just looking at him from what he did behind the 3-point line, and as you also said, that might have been an outlier there. So we don't know. And so it's kind of wait and see. And maybe he'll make us look foolish this year, and that's fine. But, you know, I'm fine. I was fine with us leaving him off the list, particularly when there were other players who all of us sort of agreed were in the top 100. So if one of us didn't, or two of us didn't, then that player just wasn't going to make it. And that's how we did it. And I thought that was the fairest way to look at it. I really quickly wanted to shout out our own social team for their hard work promoting the list and breaking it down. It's always appreciated. Carmelo Anthony was someone we were called out for not including, and I honestly don't have a lot to say here. I didn't spend 2 seconds considering him for the list. I don't know about you. Were you painfully kind of going through his shot chart last year and wondering if maybe he deserved a spot?
No, I did not lose sleep over Carmelo this year. You know, as sad as it is, watching our favorite players decline over time, it does happen. I mean, and he's not the only really good player we had to leave off. I mean, we didn't include John Wall. We don't know what he's going to do. Does he land another team? Could he have a good year? Yeah, but this is Carmelo. He's like approaching 40. You know, we got it. You know, it's a list of 100. You know, yeah. there's a cut line. There's a cut line somewhere, and I think we know what he is, and I don't think we need to like go into this discussion for much longer than this.
Right. So I want to now talk about no disrespect to what we just said, but I guess like more criticism that we might actually agree with that we've seen out there. And so one example I have, my buddy Ricky O'Donnell, a Chicago legend in his own right. He let me know on Twitter that Us putting Jaylen Brown over Zach LaVine was a humongous mistake, and that we will regret it for the rest of our lives. Shout out to you, Ricky. LaVine came in at 29 on our list. Jaylen Brown came in at 27. I believe Drew Holiday was the guy in the middle there between those two.
Yes.
You had LaVine at 34 on your initial list, which was lower than all of us. Herring had him at 21, which was higher than all of us. And I think Rohan and I were kind of in the middle there. But just what was your rationale for kind of where you put Zach LaVine on this list? Because he's obviously coming off of an incredibly efficient season, made an all-star team, was on Team USA, really good there, I guess. Made some strides defensively. The team was still pretty bad, though. But just what were you thinking with Zach and trying to rank him?
Yeah, honestly, you know, I will say, like, the more that I think about it, I think I was probably too low with him. That was one of the ones where when we kind of all talked about it, I was like, oh, yeah, like, he should be higher. Like, I don't know if I just have a blind spot for Chicago for whatever reason, even though I now live here again. Yeah, I mean, he was really good last year. And I think, you know, part of it was, you know, last year I was way too low on him. So I felt bad because I screwed that up. So then I tried to put him higher, but then I didn't realize how much higher you guys were going to put him because, like, let's be honest, like, I, you know, during the year, you guys probably watch more of the NBA than I do. You know, I'm able to watch, but I'm also, I have to watch a lot of college basketball. I have to watch high school basketball. I'm kind of doing, you know, all different things. So mm-hmm. I think I probably didn't fully understand how much better he got last year. So, you know, I think where we ended up with him is fine. I think he's in the right, like, tier of players. I think you could have argued him, you know, probably 24, 25, 26. But I think, you know, again, a lot of this just comes down to the winning aspect, which does matter, particularly if you are, you know, the go-to guy. But yeah, he's so efficient. He could keep getting better. Like, it wouldn't shock me if he rises more next year. But I mean, he's just a player who I've done a 180 on just generally, just watching the way he's sort of adjusted in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I don't think of him being in that, like, Devin Booker, Donovan Mitchell. I'm trying to think of some other guys in that class who are just like that type of player, like young, high-volume, high-usage scorers who are actually pretty efficient. I still don't – like, I'm a pretty big fan of Zach LaVine's, but I still don't really – put him there with those two, or like even a Jamal Murray, honestly, which might sound sacrilegious coming off the season that LaVine just had. But yeah, there's just a little bit of a stink on him because of how the Bulls played. And, you know, they go out and get Vucevic last year. There wasn't a lot of success after that trade. Little underwhelming, as you can probably attest to being a Chicago resident. And this year's going to be huge. Obviously, he's kind of the cream of the crop of the free agency class, number one. Number two, they bring in DeRozan, they bring in Lonzo Ball. Like, if they don't make the playoffs this year, I don't know what that says about Zach LaVine, to be honest. I think that this is a big year for him.
Oh, for sure. But, you know, I do think that they believe in him. And I think, you know, part of why you saw them do those things is because they realized how good he could be. And they, the Bulls absolutely. Probably knew they had to signal to him, like, we're in this. And we're doing this the right way, and you know, you're not going to have to. We're going to get you help, right? I mean, I think that was probably the impetus behind it. So, you know, we'll see if it works. I'm fascinated to see to go to some of those games, but again, his efficiency is really pretty crazy. All things considered, last year, and also the volume with which he you know, did it. So, you know, I always the other thing to keep in mind is, you know, how minutes inflate someone like the secondary counting stats, rebounds, assists. You know. I don't sure. like, you know, he averaged almost 5 assists, but is Zach LaVine suddenly going to be like a great passer? Probably not. But it is a reflection of, you know, how often he's on the floor, the type of minutes he's earned, and also the type of usage he's earned, you know, having the ball in his hands. So
a listener named Brian also reached out to me to say that, shortly before we recorded, actually, that us having Jaylen, over, there's a lot of Jaylen hate. us having Jaylen over Drew Holiday was sacrilegious. I personally disagree with that. I think Jaylen was fine where he was, but just what are your thoughts on us having Jaylen ahead of Drew?
Yeah, well, I had Drew. I'm looking at my list. I had Drew 25, and I had Jaylen 30. So I was on the other end of that. Again, it's so I understand why we landed there, and I was. ultimately I was comfortable with it just because I think part of the exercise being, you know, let's take players and try to imagine them in like a neutral context. I think, you know, there's a much better chance of Jaylen being able to be like a number one scorer, you know, were he not on the Celtics, right? Like he could put him on Orlando or something and he'd probably have, you know, be able to have a Zach LaVine type, maybe not efficiency, but like point totals, right? So like, you know, you factor that into account. Drew, everywhere he goes is pretty much Drew, right? And that's can be really, really good, especially if, you know, he was a missing piece, obviously for Milwaukee, because they, you know, he did what he did in New Orleans, but he had, you know, more help. He didn't have to, you know, make as many decisions with the ball. He was able to be more of like the secondary, tertiary playmaker, and that was perfect for him. And he can focus on playing defense. And I think that's the role that he likes too. You know, I think where in the past where he can be frustrating is when he has the ball a little bit too much. Again, we're projecting out here and, you know, Jaylen Brown, I mean, he's still only 24, has really, you know, started to show like I mean, I thought last year he made a big leap personally. So, you know, I don't have any problem with what we where we landed with it, where it's just like you think that maybe there's a little bit more like leap potential in him, whereas Drew is just kind of going to be Drew, which is fine and great for Milwaukee. But for the purpose of this exercise, it's all splitting hairs, right? And it's tough. I mean, that's I feel like we've had this type of conversation a billion times, and it's never conclusive.
I just want to say also for the record that I'm looking at the list now that I put together, and I actually had Drew Holiday at 26 and I had Jaylen at 27. So I just want to get that out there. I didn't even realize that I did that, which just kind of speaks to the fluidity of this entire exercise, where I said this on our last episode, but I looked at my list right before I recorded with Rohan earlier this week, and I was like, what idiot put this together? It's just like sort of certain players that I was just like, I don't agree with myself there. I don't know what I was thinking in that moment, which is pretty funny. Another player I want to talk about real briefly is Trae Young, who we ranked ahead of Kyrie Irving, and we ranked ahead of Chris Paul. And I think a good reason, a good chunk to explain why we did that was I had Trae at 14 on my list, which was higher than everybody, and you had him at 21. So you also had CP at 13. So just what are your thoughts on, you know, us having Trae as high as we? I should be answering my own question right now, because
I mean, like, I think. Honestly, I was like happy with where we landed. Like, I honestly forgot.
I think I was too. Yeah,
I forgot that I put Chris Paul that high, and I think I just didn't think about the regression factor or whatever. Like, I think people also overestimate how like married we are to our list. It's like that's why we do this as a group, because I think we ultimately land in a better place. I'd say the argument, like, if we're talking about those three guys, I mean, I just think Trey's passing makes him, even, you know, as good of a scorer and as you know, proven as Kyrie is at those things, I think Trae continues to get better. And to me, passing is just such a big element of guard play, as it should be. And, you know, I know Trae has a lot of turnovers, but he has the ball a lot, and I think it'll eventually go down. But if you had put the other guys in Atlanta, they would have had as much success, in Chris Paul as well, just because the style they played was so predicated on Trae being able to, you know, play in transition and fire threes and pass the ball the way he passes it. And because the, you know, the other guys they have are not creative players. None of them are. And it's really unusual to have a team with that much talent, but only one real true creative player, and to have as much success as they did. And I think it's a testament to him and how, you know, creative he can be with the ball. You know, I mean, you know, Chris Paul had an amazing year, probably had a little bit more, I mean, at least equally good, probably a better supporting cast, certainly a better number two and number three with DeAndre and Booker, right? But they also, you know, in crunch time, they played the Chris Paul style, which is we're going to, you know, have a measured possession and we're going to make the right play. And you can win that way. But if you put Chris Paul in the Hawks, I don't know if it would have gone quite as well as it did for Atlanta, right? Like, I don't know. That could be wrong. I'm just, you know, going off the top. What do you think, like, of those two guys, if you swapped them?
Man, that's a great question.
Right.
I mean, it's funny. Like, I don't think either. I think both teams would be worse, actually. Like,
I agree.
I think that and they're where they are for a reason. I love Trey for all the reasons that you outlined. I think that defense was such a big question mark for him heading into the postseason. And I'm not going to say that he's Drew Holiday or anything like that, but I thought he held up really well when they tried to attack him. Not perfectly, but well enough for them to advance and win two series without home court advantage. And the way he was the focal point of, or just like the number one thing that the Knicks defense, the Bucks defense, the Sixers, these are the like three of the five best defenses in the NBA last season. And they, all of them were just like, we have to stop Trey. And really none of them could stop Trey. So he's remarkable. He's an absolute blur. He led the entire NBA and made free throws last season. And I know that that is going to be really interesting this year for him as he kind of adjusts to how the refs call him and officiate some of the things that he does on the court. But yeah, I'm like a humongous fan of his game. And like, I think he can easily be one of the best, if not the best point guards in the entire NBA very, very soon. And if you just look at, I know we're not supposed to kind of factor in situation, but the fact that he's one of the very few, if not the only, just like all NBA caliber players, who's the only all NBA caliber player on his team, on a team that's very good and could finish with one of the top three records in the East this regular season. I can't really think of anybody else who's like that. Maybe Jokic out West, but he just won MVP. So yeah, I'm a huge fan of Trey's. And you know, I think that with CP, who's obviously tremendous and still one of the best to do it, with me, it was like, yeah, I'm factoring in regression quite a bit. And he played a ton of minutes last year. He was healthy last year. Their whole team was healthy last year. I think that you got to kind of wonder if that's going to repeat itself going forward, just given how old he really is.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really fair point. You know, the playoff minutes, time and again, it's tough. Like, I think that's, you know, it's hard to quantify. I'm sure there are people who have researched this who are not me, but I think it's totally fair. And I think where we landed is fine. Like, I don't think Chris Paul is going to like fall off the face of the earth, but, and you know, could the Suns go back to the finals? Maybe. But like, will he repeat the year that he had in all facets? You know, I don't know. But again, one spot apart is really, it seems like a lot when we're like, oh, here's two guys, let's have a fight about who's better. But like, really, it's like not that far off at all.
No, right. And that's one of the funniest parts of this entire exercise when we're breaking it down. It's like, you could flip, like, where do we have? I'm looking at the list right now. We had like Donovan Mitchell at 24. And like, the difference between Donovan Mitchell and Kyrie and Trey and Devin Booker and Bradley Beal is like not 9 or 8 or 7 spots, really. If you think about it, it's just, that's just kind of how the cookie crumbles. Everybody's got to get ranked somewhere. Which brings us to this really fun email from Drew that kind of spawned a question in my head that I can't wait to ask you. Drew writes, "Hey guys, massive Pels fan here. If you were to ask my girlfriend what her biggest complaint about me is, it'd be that I don't miss a minute of Pels basketball. I hate to say it, my stomach is churning right now, but the national media overrates Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram. Yes, that's right, Pels fan here, and you are overrating my favorite players. Both fans and media rank players too much on what they're capable of rather than what their actual value is, as if lack of defense is a cute flaw rather than half the game. Now, for the absolute all-time offensive players, offensive impact is more important than defense. When James Harden's negatively impacting his team's defensive rating by 3 points, but tacking on 9 to the offensive rating, he's still all-time. But Zion is not there yet, and B.I. definitely is not there yet. Most of what they have going on offense, they give up on defense. When Brandon Ingram plays some D, let's put him in the top 35. When Zion plays some D, let's put him top 15, but not yet. Thanks, and still great, great work, Drew." Drew, thank you so much. This was a terrific email, and it blends and dovetails really nicely with a question that I want to ask Wu right now, which is, Which player in the top 30 do you think is most likely going to make us look like huge idiots when we go back and look at this list 6 months from now? And I ask that, and I marry that to Zion in particular, because I wrote the blurb for Zion, and Zion was the player that we argued about, I think, the most throughout this process. And I started it by saying Zion is going to make us look like idiots for putting him at number 20. So I'm obviously way higher on Zion. And maybe not, maybe way is like too dramatic, because I'm looking at the list right now and you guys weren't that far behind me, but I was just really pushing for him to go higher and higher as we were talking about him. But do you want to talk about Zion first, or do you want to kind of answer the question of who do you think is just most likely to make us look like the biggest idiots, either because we rank them too high or too low?
Oh, man. You know, I do kind of agree that he is kind of the most, and I mean, maybe it can go both ways, right? But like, assuming health, I think we could talk about Zion. Like, I would not say I am low on him. I think just the way that I rank, I tend to be like a little bit more like slow playing with these guys with, you know, the development they made. But, you know, right. Just referring to the email, you know, when you're an absolute all time offensive player, well, I think Zion might be, and he's on track to be, certainly. Yeah, like,
I think so.
The stuff he's doing is just totally like, I'm trying to restrain myself from swearing on the podcast, but it's crazy. Just things that you don't see. And, you know, obviously I watched him very closely in college and whatnot, throughout his career. So, yeah, I mean, we had him at 20. I mean, I could see him. I mean, do you think, I don't know how high you can really jump, because again, the defense, it's a very valid point at the same time. Like, but when we're doing this, it's like, we still have to just quantify, like, what do we value in a player, and like, who would you rather have right now? And it's hard to go down a list of guys who, and even just for this year. And if you take out the next 5 years out of it, just as good as he is right now, he is better than like a lot of guys. So like, I think it's splitting hairs. If he were suddenly in a context where he would, you know, be on a team that would win, and I don't know what it would take, but, you know, win 45, 50 games, then are we talking about him in the same stratosphere as, you know, Jason Tatum or, you know, Devin Booker? Maybe, yeah. So I think that's a good place to start. But it is just so hard to, you know, I do think a lot of the defensive issues structurally that they have, it does kind of hinge on him, because he is – it's my opinion that I think, like, if you're having a four that is like a weird defensive problem, is probably the biggest structural issue you can have. You can't hide guys like that, because they're either guarding, you know, a bigger wing who they can't keep up with, or they're guarding a big who they can't really do anything about. And he's kind of stuck in that zone, right? It's just like, who do you stick him on? You'd prefer to not have to hide him, but clearly he is not like the menacing weak side rim protector that he was at Duke. You know, the game has sped up in the NBA. It's not just about him being in shape or not. It's also a faster paced game. He is small for a power forward in terms of height. And he is relying a lot on being in the right place and then timing his leap, right? And also factor in how much effort he has to put in on offense to just do what he does. So all those things considered, that's part of why for me it was tough to rank him, because it's just really hard to know how to quantify like insane offense versus strained structural defensive problems.
Yeah, those are all wonderful points. I think that, you know, our listener bringing up Harden is fascinating, because I spent the majority of Harden's like true prime when he was with the Rockets being like, I don't really care about his defense. Like, I would like him not to be a total turnstile and literally just ole his man to the basket. But everything that he did on offense, I just felt like was so great historically that it didn't really matter to me. And you can build around it. And I know that Harden and Zion obviously played two different positions. They have two different roles, as you were outlining. For me, it's just like, yeah, the stuff offensively that we saw. And what's really interesting is trying to strip him out of context. But contextually, everything that he did production-wise last year was in like the worst possible context, which is why I'm just like, okay, if he had some shooting around him, if he was not playing with Steven Adams and Jackson Hayes, what numbers is he, this dude, actually putting up? Because he's officially scoring in the restricted area and getting buckets at the rim like prime Shaq. Like, straight up. That's what he was doing last year. And a lot of it was, like, on drives where the everyone on the defense is just like, okay, there's Eric Bledsoe. I don't need to guard Eric Bledsoe. There's Josh Hart. I'm just not going to guard Josh Hart right now. I'm going to pack the paint with everything that we have to stop this guy. And you couldn't do it. So I just think he's like, he's as unstoppable as anyone, really. Like, you compare his numbers in the paint with Giannis. Zion was better. So pegging that forward, you know, they got a little bit more shooting around him this season, and I just think he'll look so much better. And I know that I hope doesn't sound like I'm glossing over the defensive stuff. That does matter for sure. But as I kind of was just outlining with Trey, it's like when you get in a playoff series, if you have the right pieces around that player where, you know, he can hide on a Reggie Bullock and like not get destroyed, you're not hurting yourself that much, maybe. And that's certainly a debatable point that I'm making. But or like right. Put him on PJ Tucker, you know? Like, I don't know. So I'm just very, very, very high on Zion. I'm really excited to see the season that he has. I hope he stays healthy. I hope Devontae Graham is everything he needs and more. I think that Pelicans fans feel the same way. But yeah, he's just so terrific. So let me just spin it real back at you. Was there a player besides Zion who sort of you're looking at the list and you're kind of like, maybe not that we like messed that up entirely, but just like we could regret this decision in the future?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, this is a tough question because we're talking about the best players in the NBA. So it's like, sure. Who is going to unexpectedly do something weird or what's going to happen? And like, I mean, I'll say like the one player I always have a really hard time with is Gobert. And I will also preface this by saying, you know, I had him ranked. Chris had him at 14. I had him at 16. Like I had him higher than you and Roe. But also, did I feel good about that? Like, not at all. Right. It's like I try to give him respect because of how good they've been for such a long time. But it just worries me that he's the type of player where I just feel like one injury or something like that, he could just like fall off a cliff in terms of like what he does. Like, and I don't know if that's misguided. You know, he's not that old. Like, I think we always think he's older than he is just because he's been so good for so long. But it's just like with bigs who are that big and have had mostly clean bills of health, it's like it just always feels like a ticking time bomb. And I don't want Jazz fans to be like, you're being unfair, because I don't think I am. And I'm not criticizing Gobert, but I'm not criticizing him either, because this is not something that he can necessarily control. Like, when he's healthy, he's good. But I do just worry that at some point, and again, just watching him time again in the playoffs, getting played off the floor or being a huge vulnerability in some structural way, it scares me. So, again, I definitely gave him respect the way I ranked. But at the same time, that was probably the one that I keep coming back to. Like, I don't know how I really feel.
So this particular debate, I did not include on the outline with you, Boo. I apologize. And is this like the definition of burying the lead? But I feel like we can't go this entire podcast without like even mentioning the guys who finished in the top three. That would be pretty stupid of us.
Oh, yeah.
So true. we had, as I said earlier, we had KD number one, we had Giannis number two, and we had LeBron number three. So do you think that there's any I don't know if controversy is not really the right word here, but just like, how do you think why do you think that is the right order for those three like megastars who, you know, in a month we could flip that around? LeBron could be one, Giannis could be one, etc. Just how do you think that shaked out in terms of us being as fair and as accurate as possible?
Sure. Well, I will say LeBron at three was the only unanimous, like, we all ranked him three. I think that was
true.
Really, it was the only unanimous thing that anyone came up with on this entire process, which probably tells you something. We were pretty – it's always tough because, you know, you never want to be too low on the best or second best player of all time, depending on, you know,
sure,
how you feel. You never want to be the guy who's too low too quickly on that guy. But I do think that, you know, we are starting to see you know, the age factor in? It doesn't factor in too greatly because he is such a genius. He's such a good passer. He just has such an incredible all-time great basketball IQ that, like, the things that he is declining, the areas in which he is declining are masked by how good he is at covering up for what I'm sure he knows he has lost in terms of physically whatever. And he can still put this. Yeah.
He sees into the future, honestly, like when he plays basketball, like the we talk about like guys who can make the game slow down. He plays in slow motion, and I don't mean that physically. I just mean like mentally, everything's going so slow for him, and he's just a genius. So as he declines physically, he'll still be great for years to come because
Brain. Yeah, yeah. It's like a first baseman who's going to hit 30 home runs, 40 home runs until they're, you know, about to retire just because of how good they are, right? It's like that's like an analog. Like that's they talk about like old player skills in baseball, like guys who have those long tail Hall of Fame career. That's like basically this version of this, but it's unusual because he's a wing who is a playmaker and he breaks the mold in every way. But I just think I do think that when you do see it, is like it's just harder for him to like flip that switch now. If it's like a one-on-one situation, if it's the end of the game and he has to go beat someone to make a play, like I think it's just it is getting harder for him to suddenly do that, and that's so why I think-
Yeah, just real quick, like I'm just kind of thinking out loud here. How far do you think he could fall realistically from this year's list to next year's list? And when I say that, like I'm looking at some of the guys who are right behind him, and you know, Steph is the first guy right behind him, but that's not kind of the player I'm wanting to talk about because of age, but more so like Luka and Jokic coming in at 5 and 6, even AD at 9. Like AD could pass LeBron this year, and we'd see it every single night because they're teammates. Just how far do you think LeBron could even fall on a list like this when we're kind of putting it together next year? Hopefully,
yeah. I mean, it would probably be hard for me to see him if he's totally healthy falling out of my top 10. Anytime soon. It just doesn't feel like that's where we are in his career. Like you kind of know sometimes when guys are like entering a different phase of their career, and he's been in this phase for a while. It doesn't seem like he's leaving. Right. I mean, we know he's dedicated to staying in shape and you know, he's doing the right stuff. So it's like, we can't just assume he's going to stop being effective. But I can see Luka. I don't know what it would take, 'cause his production is already so like insane in terms of what he's doing. Right. Like, I don't know. You know, if Luka becomes more efficient as a scorer, I could see him, you know, making a leap up there. It's so hard to quantify how good these guys are because they're all so good. And it comes down to kind of a matter of taste at some point. Like, it's probably not going to be Steph who leaps him, just because Steph is probably in a similar career phase where, you know, obviously a little bit younger, but, you know, kind of, you know, the last back end prime. You know, I don't know. Would you say LeBron is still in his prime, or do you think it's like the next chapter after that? I don't know.
He's got tiers to his prime, honestly.
Yeah.
Like his prime started in like what, 2008, and then he was unstoppable in those last years in Cleveland, and then what he did in Miami when surrounded by more talented players, and just athletically he went up a level as well. I don't think we'll ever see that again from anyone ever, on both ends of the floor. And then just, you kind of think about what he did in 2018 as like the only dude on a team that was just absolutely wretched, but could dominate one of the greatest teams ever put together in Golden State and game one of the finals that year. So like right now, when I look at him, I mean, he's a year removed from a finals MVP, right? Not even technically a calendar year removed from it. His team got obviously banged up last year. He got banged up last year during a super weird season. I don't think he's that far off from the guy who just won finals MVP physically. So, yeah, I would say he's still in some kind of shade of his prime, which is wild to even consider.
Right.
Let's close on just, and this might be a very quick conversation. I think it will be, frankly. But Giannis Antetokounmpo has one of the all-time postseason runs, wins finals MVP, has 50 points in the closing game of the NBA Finals. On his way to that defeats the Brooklyn Nets that had Kevin Durant just bawling out of his mind on it. We had KD number one. We had Giannis number two. For me, it was like when I first sat down to do this list, the first name I wrote down was KD number one. That was just like an absolute no-brainer for me. Was it an absolute no-brainer? I know you had KD one, you had Giannis two. Was it as much of an absolute no-brainer for you, or did you kind of want to consider just Giannis's, you know, obviously his ascendance as this immediate first ballot Hall of Famer last year and everything they did in the finals and just how iconic all of that was?
Oh, no, it absolutely was not easy. I had Giannis one first, and then I switched to KD. Like, I thought it through. I just think KD right now is just, like, the most singular thing in basketball, where it's just, like, everyone knows that if he is doing the things that he is capable of doing at the highest level, then you're not going to stop it. You know, Giannis, you can try different stuff. And the Bucks ultimately got the right pieces around him to where the things that he doesn't do well didn't really matter as much. Obviously, right. You know, the playoffs, it's always hard to know how much to really quantify the playoffs as we do these rankings, because there's so much luck and weird circumstances that go into it. Different matchups, you expose different things. You know, we want to value success to some extent, but then there are always guys who get like a playoff bump and then we regret it a year later. Like, I don't know, like Jay Crowder made our list this year. Can we guarantee he's on it next year? No, but he had a good run with Phoenix, right? So like, that also applies to stars. And I think, you know, if you kind of take, I think you might've made this point too on our call, I think, right? If you take out the, you know, the aspect of who won the finals or and who won that series, it kind of makes it a more clear-headed discussion between those two guys.
Right. And I wrote the KD blurb, which it actually took me a lot longer than a time than I thought it would. I thought about filing just duh to our editors and seeing how they would react to that, but I didn't. And one of the things I included in it was that Giannis himself multiple times during that series said that KD was the best player on the planet. So if Giannis, who's like trying to guard him and going up against him and trying to stop him, if Giannis thinks that, and I think Giannis is a very earnest, honest athlete, I don't think he was just saying that to say it. I think he honestly believes it. So I'm not going to argue with Giannis when it comes to this. And that's kind of what didn't push me over the edge, but it just kind of was the cherry on top for me factoring KD as number one. Cool. Well, I think we covered everything. Is there anything else you want to mention? Any other slights that you want to address on the list?
What did I think? I don't know. I think I feel pretty good about where we landed. Like, this is a random thing to end on, but like, I do think that the one thing I thought was maybe we were of the three second-year guys of LaMelo, Edwards, and Haliburton, we might have had those three like too far apart. Like, I would have had those three, like,
agreed.
We had what LaMelo was 51, Edwards was 77, and Haliburton was 97. I had those guys like much closer on my list. I actually had Haliburton one spot ahead of Edwards, so that's just me.
That is an entirely random point that we're closing on, but it's one that I 100% agree with, and we actually briefly mentioned it in our last episode, Rohan and I, when we were kind of talking about Edwards and LaMelo and why was LaMelo that much higher than Haliburton, like 40 plus spots, when that's just not accurate. But again, it's just like, it's the complicated nature of putting a list like this together. Great. So I guess we'll close there. Thank you again to all of our listeners. Please keep sending all of your emails into openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Thank you to you, Jeremy Wu, for hopping on today and discussing our list and breaking it down, and again, captaining us through this arduous process that we all lost countless hours of sleep over. Right, so thanks again to the listeners also. And everybody enjoy, everybody stay safe, and everybody continue to enjoy the off season. Whoa. Yeah.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Brighten up your garage or workspaces with LED utility and panel light bulbs from GT Light. GT Light light bulbs are energy efficient, and with their easy adjustable light panels, you can direct light where you need it most. Save big on all GT industrial utility and panel light bulbs. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for more hot deals happening now. Save big.